All right, welcome back to the Modern Dealer Business Development Podcast for August 2nd, 2022. All things automotive business development all the time. Today, of course, is no exception. I'm your host, BDC Colin, or Business Development Colin Thomas. I help dealers with business development in the modern dealership world that we're in today. I build business development centers from the ground up. I staff them. I train them. I manage them. If you need help with business development in your dealership, my phone number is 708-RED-LINE, 708-733-5463. Today we're talking about ethics in automotive, and I wanted to share a perspective other than mine, and I'm bringing a gentleman by the name of Richard Cunningham. He's a sales manager for a new car dealership, and without further ado, I want to jump right into the podcast and start talking ethics in automotive.
Hey, Richard, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Colin. How are you this morning?
I'm doing really good. You're Richard Cunningham. You're a sales manager with a new car dealership. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Awesome. So you and I have been connected for a little while and I've followed you a little bit. I like kind of the tone of your posts. And I invited you on the podcast because I've been wanting to talk more and more about ethics in auto, and that's kind of the theme for today's podcast. I know you have a lot of opinions on ethics and the state of the union, I guess, for lack of better words. But I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today and just kind of talk with you and maybe share a little bit with the rest of the community that's listening in.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You said, you know, you've been following and you know, a lot of people, they want to see what you have to say. But when you touch on the issues of ethics in the car business, it's a topic that a lot of people want to shy away from. And I think it's something that's long overdue that, you know, we have that proverbial come to Jesus moment that, you know, with these new regulations coming in and things that are in the process that, you know, it's a day of awakening that we got to be accountable for ourselves.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. I came across a post not too long ago of yours where, without naming any names, you talked about, and this is not a singular issue, this is not an isolated issue by any means, so I just want to preface this by saying that. But there's a rather well-known dealership in New York that got in some hot water for doing some questionable things. We'll just leave it at that. I think they ended up with, you know, a lot of restitution that they had to pay back and a lot of fines, almost $1 million. And some of those things I've seen, a lot of dealers are on some level engaging with some of those things. And with, you know, as you kind of alluded to, some of the upcoming, you know, the regulations and the rules that are being proposed with the FTC, I think a lot of dealers are going to get hit with a real hard dose of reality when they realize that many of the ways that we're generating our profitability, our gross profit, they're going to have to be adjusted. I mean, a lot of the things that we're doing in a lot of dealerships across the country today are really being scrutinized very, very heavily. And this specific instance kind of received, I think, a lot of attention because that specific group kind of put themselves on a stage with the person that kind of represented that group. But what is your feelings? You know, I know we've talked a little bit about this. What's your feelings on kind of some of this upcoming or the proposed FTC, you know, rules that are being kind of discussed? There's a 150 pages of proposed rules for car dealers that relate to, you know, advertising practices and, you know, what they call, you know, junk fees, things like nitro and tires and things like that. And I know a lot of dealers are engaging in that stuff. They're selling nitrogen in tires. They're selling sometimes, you know, things that don't offer much value, if any, to the customer. And I know, you know, for a fact that a lot of dealers sometimes, I'll just say that some dealers sometimes don't even give the customer those things. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And I think customers were already kind of not real happy with the overall experience pre-COVID, you know, and then COVID kind of came along and changed the way that, you know, people can interact with us and other companies. And I know some other companies have tried to make the process more streamlined, more transparent, maybe more ethical, or seemingly more ethical. But what are your thoughts on kind of some of this new, you know, these new rules that are being discussed for dealers with FTC and all that?
Yeah, I don't think it's just going to be a discussion. When you look at last year, they handled 100,000 complaints, 50 enforcements, which were all within similar latitude of what you were talking about that what happened in New York. So with the escalating prices and everything else that have happened with cars, you know, during this period of this pandemic and everything else, I think that it's made it more amplified for customers to file complaints because of the way things were done. So, you know, I've always said after 35 years in the car business, there's going to come a time when Congress, like everything else, is going to step in and say enough is enough. And I think it's a benefit for both the dealer and the consumer because we should be transparent in what we do. There should not be any hidden agendas. In 35 years, I've seen the old stuff, door edge guards and rust and dust for 1995, you know, all of those things. And a lot of stores got away from, you know, doing things like that with, you know, the internet and everything else. But there's still a majority of I would say probably 50% of the stores that are still engaging in that type stuff. The one that always gets me is, you know, the nitrogen tires. Yep. Because for me as a dealer, if we do a dealer trade, I really don't want to pay for nitrogen and tires, you know, because the cost of that was really nothing to you. You know, some things I understand with, you know, obviously with theft, you know, wheel locks and stuff like that, because it's becoming a problem, you know, nationwide of theft and things like that. So some things I see benefit to, but I think we've taken it to the far extreme sometimes of profitability over the welfare of our customers and even the welfare of our dealerships. And I think this new FTC is going to be a benchmark. And I think that, and what I mean by benchmark, Colin, is this: they never create things and then do not hire sufficient people to follow up with it. So I think that you're going to see an increased activity from the FTC once they put this into place, because I really do believe that this time they're going to enforce it. When you look at the number of complaints that have risen year over year for the last 5 years, I think they're hearing what the consumer says. And to go touch on the one thing in New York, and the one thing that I think is scary of that scenario is how that whole thing transpired. You know, you got, you know, obviously the mayor and everyone involved in it in New York. And I think that we forget sometimes that this world is a very connected world. All it does is take the right person with the right influence to reach the right person in leadership to bring problems for everyone. So I think it's just the right time that, you know, with these new proposals, that it gives us an opportunity to take reflections of ourselves, how we do business, and get prepared for what's coming. Because I think you're going to find a lot of stores are not going to get prepared. And then when this new thing takes place and they start handing out these fines, and I read up to $46,000 per occurrence, which is huge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you think that, so we know, you know, I think that there's a certain kind of dealer that might be, maybe has historically kind of just gambled, or, you know, maybe it's not even a gamble. I mean, you know, if you do enough of these unsustainable business practices long enough, you're going to make a ton of extra money doing them. So do you think that, you know, dealers are going to continue to be able to, or are just going to continue to, you know, just gamble that they're going to make more money if, even when and if they have to pay out with settlements and things like that, as this dealer in New York had to do? I mean, because, you know, $800,000 is a lot of money, but if you look at, you know, maybe all the things that they were engaging with, and there were quite a few of them. But I think you're right. I mean, you hit it on the head. I think you're spot on, and there's not a lot of people that would admit that there's probably an even split. Maybe it's even a little bit higher than that. I think at least half of dealers right now on some level are partaking in some of that, you know, risky behavior or unsustainable business practice, you know, practices that, let's be honest, a lot of them happen in the F&I office. I think we know that. You know, they involve things like, you know, those, you know, I'm not against profit. I mean, obviously I'm not against profitability. I'm just for sustainable business practices. But, you know, I've seen dealers that are, you know, charging for, you know, packages that include like things like maybe tints and wheel locks for $29.95, $39.95, $49.95 on top of maybe a pretty steep market adjustment. In some cases, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for, you know, simple cars like Versas and things like that. So now you've got, you know, an $8,000 premium on top of your MSRP. And half of that is for, you know, I guess tints and wheel locks and things like that. And I think, I don't think that's sustainable. I've seen a lot of different discussion going on about this stuff. And, you know, it's really interesting. There's a group on Reddit where there's, you know, a lot of industry professionals, and then there's customers that come into that group. It's called Ask Car Sales. And it's just a really interesting time right now, because industry professionals are kind of saying through and through, as a directive to customers, look, or as a, I guess, a kind of guiding customers through the process, suggesting like, well, you know, look at the numbers at the end of the day. You know, if you've got one dealer that's maybe saying we're going to charge you $1,000 for wheel locks and tints, for example, and then you've got another dealer that's going to charge you $6,000, you know, for a market adjustment, obviously it makes sense to go with the dealer that's charging $1,000 for the wheel locks and tints. But I have a hard time not coming back to, you know, how long can we get away with forcing our customers to buy that kind of stuff? Because in a lot of stores, we're doing that. You know, we're kind of saying, you know, this is, we're not charging a market adjustment, but you have to buy this package. And I think that there's, I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts for sure, but I think that there's a lot of companies that are coming into the space that conversation doesn't happen. The, you know, the mandatory add-ons, you know, again, obviously if we put tints on a car, we've got to mark it up and make a little bit of money. And it becomes kind of a subjective discussion, because it's like, well, how much is the right amount of money? How much is too much? But then it also becomes, I think, a conversation of, can we really force a customer to buy something that they don't? Should we try to force a customer to buy something? I mean, because we can't force a customer, but it's happening. I mean, you know, and the reviews and the customer experiences are reflecting, you know, customers that are kind of put in a corner and they're told, you know, well, we don't do market adjustments, but you have to buy this $29.95 preferred customer package, you know, which I think is kind of ironic, because it's like, if that's how you treat your preferred customers, you force them to buy, you know, this thing that they might not want, they might not need, and in some instances they don't even get. But do you, I guess, to all that said, to come back to, you know, where I was going is, you know, do you think that dealers are going to kind of just ride this out once the FTC rules become, you know, written and rules, and they're just going to kind of gamble, hey, I'm probably going to make more money, you know, doing this the way I'm doing it with these unsustainable business practices in place, and I'll pay whatever penalty comes along. how long do you think that's going to be, you know, an option? Because I'm curious to get your take on it.
I don't think it's going to be a sustainable option to continue to do business that way, because the language that's in this new FTC writing is very clear, addressing the very things that you're talking about, these packages and the nitrogen tires and all these other things that, you know, have become a customary practice of many places. We charge $119 for wheel locks. I mean, this, you know, it's for our benefit to make sure tires and wheels and stuff don't get stolen, you right. know. But I can't go to a customer and say I'm going to charge you $999 for something that the customer is not that dumb to understand. And, you know, and I'm going to give you an interesting take, and I want to see what your thought is with this. You know, a lot of people are upset with Jim Farley at Ford right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When Ford started, because I came from a Ford store, and I'm at a CDJR store now, but we do have a Ford store as well. But Ford, when they launched these electric vehicles, one of the messages was that we were not going to allow our dealer body to take these excessive markups and charge customers X amounts of dollars over and above MSRP. And we're going to police this action pretty seriously. Well, I think Ford did police it, because now you see that Farley says, hey, what we're going to do is these electric vehicles are going to be much like courtesy deliveries. Your customer's going to go online. Your customer's going to order it. The price is already going to be set for the customer, because I think the manufacturer understands this too, Colin, and I think this is going to be a wake-up call for the industry. If you as the dealer want to engage in bad practices, hey, you know what? These hot vehicles that you want to charge 15, 20, 30, 35 grand over on, we can just eliminate it, because we can have the customer, and they proved in COVID that they can do it, is customers will order exactly what they want. They'll wait on the car. They don't have an issue doing that. And we'll make sure you don't do bad business practices, because we won't let you as the dealer be involved. So, you know, I think some of these things that you're seeing both from the manufacturer and what you're seeing from the government is, okay, it's time for you guys to police yourselves and do the right things. If not, and I don't think, you know, when dealers start trying to fight this with Ford, that they're going to find many legislators that are going to come running to their aid for state franchise laws and say, I think you're going to get the response with this new language is, you know what, we've been telling you for years that it's time to clean up your act. You haven't done it. Now the manufacturer is forcing you to do it. So I think that you're going to see some vindication there that, you know, when manufacturers start looking at it, that it's a problem to the consumer, and not only to the consumer, but to the brand, you know, and they have every right to protect the name of their brand. And I think, you know, we've engaged in some things, and I say that we have collectively, because, you know, over the years, I there's a lot of things that have happened in businesses that have done things that should not have been done. And, you know, I tell people this, you as a person and an individual, not just your store, but you got to make a line to say when is enough for you as a human being that I'm not going to engage in this myself. If you, the business, want to do it, then I can't work here. And I think Ford is saying that with these electric vehicles, that you're going to order them from us. We're going to send them to the dealer closest to the customer. There's going to be no markup, and we're going to give the customer, you, a dealer, a flat fee for delivering the car. I think we created this situation ourselves by, okay, I'm going to take a Mach-E and I'm going to mark it up 15, 20 grand when Ford told you from the beginning that's not what their desire were with, you know, these electric vehicles. So I think the manufacturers are going to start stepping up with what they're planning on doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of people right now that are not real happy with Jim Farley for that. It's interesting to watch those discussions. What I notice is that there's kind of there's a lot of very well recognized names in retail automotive that kind of are pushing, you know, I'm trying to figure out a way to describe it. They're, you know, really unhappy with the direction that Jim Farley went with, you know, the direct to consumer model with, you know, it's basically, you know, kind of, almost a Best Buy online pickup process, right? they're going that that direction. And there's a lot of people that think that, you know, that we haven't really brought this on ourselves. And I think you're spot on. I mean, I think we have. I think that anybody that's pushing against what's happened right now, or what has happened thus far, is really kind of dangerous to our industry at this point, because we are where we are because we've done what we've done. And so moaning about where we're at really accomplishes nothing. I mean, Jim Farley isn't going to step down, and the things that he's doing to kind of cater to customers' needs aren't going to change because we don't like it. I think that there are some things that are already kind of in motion. Different OEMs are kind of handling some of these things a little bit differently. I know, you know, VW has got like one model they're selling direct to consumer, and Ford's going, you know, direct to consumer with I believe all of their EVs. But things are kind of being renegotiated, I mean, in real time right now. So I think that there's there's some wiggle room for it, or there's some time for us to do things that will actually impact how manufacturers, you know, negotiate the landscape in the coming months and years. But when I say years, I'm not thinking 5 or 10 years. I mean, if I don't know if the statistics are, you know, going to be what they say they are. I think there's a lot of people saying, well, by 2020, half of the EVs being sold, or half of cars being sold, are going to be EVs. I think that EVs will pick up in popularity. I don't know if, you know, by that much in the next 7.5 years, but let's just say maybe they do. Let's just say half of, you know, the cars that are being delivered in 2020 are EVs. You know, I think the question is then, you know, whenever it happens, and, you know, it's going to happen where we hit that tipping point. I mean, and how many more? It's not a matter of when, it's a matter of, you know, or it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when other manufacturers kind of start to mirror that behavior that Ford's going in the direction of. But I think a lot of it has to do with the things that we're doing day to day in our finance offices. I'm okay with $119 for wheel locks, but I'm not okay with $4,000 for wheel locks and selling it as, you know, well, we have a hassle-free market-based pricing and it's transparent. That's not transparent. You know, anybody with an IQ bigger than their shoe size can figure out that wheel locks, you know, they could probably pick them up for, I don't know. I haven't priced wheel locks lately, but I don't know, $40-$60, you know? So there's no way that I think it's sustainable for us to justify these egregious prices in some instances for these things that, and then to, you know, try to brand it as, hey, well, we have hassle-free, you know, market-based pricing. We don't charge over MSRP. It's interesting how everybody's kind of trying to take their own little spin. I'm curious to see what your thoughts are. I tend to think that most dealers right now are engaging in the market adjustments, maybe a little bit more than half, maybe 60-70%. What are your thoughts?
I think it's somewhere, you know, probably split down the middle. I've seen a lot of bigger stores with larger reputations saying that they're not going to do it because they want to keep their customer base, which to me is, you know, it makes sense. And you know, and I've seen a lot of them say, okay, you know, these things that are not being produced very much, you know, we are going to charge an adjustment for, you know, right now. And I mean, if, you know, you're in the car business or anywhere trying to find a commercial vehicle now, and it's like pulling teeth to find anything, you know, but I have an issue when I see, you know, cargo vans, $30,000-$40,000 over MSRP. I mean, you know, when you're charging almost what the cost of the vehicle is for an adjustment, at that point, it's gouging the consumer. It's not looking for long-term sustainability. You know, I'm a firm believer, 35 years in the business, we have a right to make a profit, make the profit the right way. treat your customer like a guest in your house. You know, it'd be like you having somebody come over to your house and say, hey, you know, what would you like to drink? And then when they're done, here, I'm going to give you a tab later of everything that I offered you now, and I want you to pay for it. You know, it's not sustainable. And I think manufacturers are taking a really hard look at it. You know, everybody thought that the model, and I'll give you two good examples that I really like. You know, people said when CarMax first came out, they're never going to last, you know, because people are going to want to negotiate. You know, they have higher than average transaction prices than anybody else in the industry right now. You know, they always ask more than anybody in their market for a car. But they've branded themselves so well for the last 30 years that we don't negotiate, and they don't. You know, your trade is a separate process. So, you know, that's not an issue with them. You know, so it's been a very transparent. And then the other thing is Tesla. You know, everybody was wondering whether this direct order was going to work. Well, these American manufacturers have found out in the last 2 years with COVID, you don't have to produce as many vehicles to be more profitable. You don't have to incentivize everything, which we knew that this was going to come an awakening sooner or later, that they were going to get smart and quit wasting as much money as they have for the last 30 years with overproduction of cars and these huge incentives to move them. You know, the pandemic helped them figure out, hey, we don't have to do it anymore. You know, the war of attrition is on, and most dealers are too blind to see it, because one way or another, with the way the new system is going with your orders to base your allocation and everything else, those that they wanted to get rid of, they're going to get rid of now, because you can't sustain your business if you can't take orders for your customer to continue to get inventory. You're not going to be around anyway. And I think that was a part of the awakening that they came to the conclusion is, hey, you know what, Chevy's got 8,300 dealers, Ford 4,900 dealers. The average customer, and here's something, Colin, that I found very interesting, and I've seen several articles on, that the average consumer today is willing to drive 500 miles to purchase the vehicle that they're looking at.
Wow.
I mean, that's a huge, if that's not a wake-up call to a store, I'll give you, honest assessment, you know, years and years, you know, Michigan and Ohio dealers are always been X plan and all the D plan friendly and everything else. And you're seeing that huge shift right now from some of those. I'm getting customers out of Michigan and Ohio that I never would have seen, because they no longer will honor plans. And we tell customers, I'm not going to honor plan. But the interesting thing to me is we're getting customers telling us that, you know, these people in their own backyards, these dealers now are doing $10,000-$15,000 markup on Jeeps, Grand Cherokees, Laredos, and these people are driving because we're charging MSRP. They're driving from Michigan to Virginia, you know. So, I think that we got to, you know, sometimes step back and take a look at what we're doing, because it's short sighted in the long run. If your customers are already, you're training them now that they can drive to buy a vehicle that they're looking for, and they'll find somebody that's going to do business transparent in the right way, you're setting yourself up for failure when things go back to normal. Because once consumers get conditioned to doing something, it's hard to get them to change. We're seeing that now with these older folks coming in where they're used to rebates and negotiations, and mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty much it's MSRP, and these older folks that have always bought cars that have always negotiated at invoice and plus my rebates and mm-hmm. give me half a holdback, they don't know how to respond because the price is the price.
Right.
You know, so we've conditioned them through the years, and the manufacturers have. Now the manufacturers have switched that focus again, saying, okay, we don't need all these rebates incentives. We just don't produce as many cars. We can hand them, you know, it will demand higher transactional prices. But you as the dealer are going to have to do the right thing to keep your customer. And it's up to you. The ball's in your court now. What are you going to do? And I think that's where you're seeing a lot of dealers struggling with trying to do things the right way, because they've been conditioned to do them the wrong way for so long.
Yep.
That now that the customer's looking for transparency and wanting to do the right things, they're searching for a dealer that will give them everything up front. I've had customers tell me, I've asked my local dealer for a buyer's order and they won't give it to me. I'm like, what is the big deal? I mean, if I got a car advertised online, this is my advertised price. The only thing that's there is your whatever our processing fee and whatever state tax fees that you have. So there's nothing that should be hidden. I mean, it's pretty easy.
You touched on so many great points. I almost don't know which ones to so first of all, you know, your point about average customer being willing to drive 500 miles on average to get a transparent, you know, purchase experience, that's mind-boggling. I mean, you think about how many dealerships somebody's passing at even half of that distance or a quarter of that distance. I mean, certainly in your metropolitan markets. And I mean, we're talking about, you know, somebody's potentially passing hundreds of car dealerships. You talked about repeat and referral business, or, you know, kind of how we're not, you know, this whole conditioning a customer to drive the distance that they may have to drive to interact with a dealership that's maybe doing things more transparently, will give you a buyer's order, you know, is not going to be charging, you know, or forcing you to buy some of these egregiously priced, you know, add-ons, which that's short-lived. I mean, the stuff that has put us in the position we're in, that stuff is not going to be optional. And so it just blows my mind that so many dealers are kind of riding this wave, and they're continuing to do these things that really in, you know, I don't know when these things are going to go into place, but the reality is it shouldn't matter, because customers already are passing your dealership and 499 or whatever, you know, hundreds of dealerships to go deal with a store that's doing business the right way. It's interesting because I talk to a lot of dealers, and of the dealers that aren't doing market adjustments right now, I love talking to those guys. I love working with and for those guys, because it's refreshing. You know, I mean, obviously, if there's a high demand for things, I know you talked about like cargo vans and things like that, and you know, but overall, you know, if we're selling at MSRP, and you know, for the most part, and we're doing things the right way, I always enjoy talking to those dealers. What's sad is that a lot of those dealers say the same thing. They're kind of like they're unsure if what they're doing is the right choice, and they're on the fence about it. And I've heard that thought process mirrored over and over. And so it just makes me wonder, you know, the guys that are playing clean right now, they know they're doing the right thing, but they don't know how it's going to impact them, or they're unsure if it's going to, you know, if people are really going to remember them. And I understand that. I mean, I understand, you know, I mean, when your competition is charging $4,000 more per, you know, delivered vehicle, and you're kind of foregoing that gross profit, you know, I can imagine that, you know, watching your competition pocket an extra $500,000 a month in gross profit, you know, probably is a hard pill to swallow for the perceived cost of relevancy or sustainability. I know that the customers that are getting, you know, these super high market adjustments and these quote unquote preferred customer packages for $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, they're not coming back. They're not going to be sending their friends and their family members. They're not going to think of you the next time they need to buy a car, especially if they're, you know, Uber buried, Uber upside down, the next time that they go, you know, start the process, because they're going to realize that you did that to them. And there's a lot of people that will make the argument that, you know, well, you know, they're getting more for their trade, you know? So, I do understand that angle of it. You know, I'm curious to see because it is a weird time right now. And if the customer gets significantly more for their trade, is it not a wash that the customer's paying And a little is, you know, relative, because a little might be $2,000 or $3,000. So it's like, you know, on one hand, I understand supply and demand, but on the other hand, I also understand that it really doesn't matter if I understand supply and demand, because it's really our customers' perception, I think, of us at this point that's going to continue to either move us forward into relevancy or to diminish our relevancy.
So
customers, go ahead.
Let's take two equal stores, you say, in the same market, and they sell 200 new cars a month.
Yeah.
The guy that's for the last 2 years has charged his customer $5,000-$10,000 over, and he sold 200 cars. What's he going to do when those people come back in a year or two wanting to trade them? He's not getting them out of them.
Right.
Because we're already seeing the used car market start to readjust. And with all the banks that I talked to are talking about the repo rates are going up, even with good credit people, because of, you know, the increased cost of everything else. So the guy that has sustained himself to say, okay, I'm still going to commit to selling my 200 cars a month, but I'm going to sell it at MSRP and I'm going to treat my customer right. I'll tell you, he grows his business here in 2 or 3 years. Because all of his customers that are coming back are still going to be in similar situations where they're not as bad in their car. But the other guy that has in the same market that has done the $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 over, his customers come back. They realize that they can't trade a car without putting substantial money down.
Right.
Now they're looking at a reflection like, you know what? I bought this from you. You did this to me. You should help me. And when they don't help them, guess where those 200 other customers go? They go back to the guy that did things the right way, and they still come out of pocket, out of money to get out of what they're in, but they're just not going to do it with the guy that put them in that situation to begin with. So I think, you know, the short-sightedness, we got to change that perspective that, you know, it's a long-term adventure, and we sell cars to build our service department. Because obviously that's where the profitability and the sustainability of any store is parts and service. So if we take the equation of we're not going to put customers in our service lanes anymore, because it's become so important to focus on $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 over MSRP, guess what? Not only do you kill your sales department, but eventually you kill your service department, because when they stop in the process of wanting to buy a car, then guess what? They stop wanting to service the car with you as well, because it's been an overall bad experience.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, you talked about CarMax, and it's funny, because there's a lot of folks that, you know, it's kind of like the whole Jim Farley conversation, you know, when anybody talks about Teslas, or I guess really EVs in general for that matter, Carvana, Vroom, CarMax, they kind of just respond the same way, and they discount their relevancy. And it's just, it's fascinating to see an industry that's evolving with so many people, I mean, that are really pushing against the evolution. And they think by digging their feet into the sand, it's going to kind of prevent changes from occurring. And I think that change is coming. You know, CarMax has, in my personal humble opinion, a pretty brilliant strategy. You said it, you know, yourself. They have a higher than average, you know, price point. But they've done a great job of branding themselves. They've done a great job of creating a transparent experience where somebody can, you know, they can pretty much complete the entire, I mean, you know, they can see what they're qualified for online. It's very transparent. And we still, to a large degree, want to push against that. Even in the stores that are, you know, kind of saying that they're transparent, they're not really all that transparent. You know, I mean, the stores that are saying we're haggle-free or hassle-free market-based pricing, well, if you're charging, you know, $8,000 or $10,000 or whatever, $6,000, $5,000, over on a Versa, I don't know. Is that really hassle free to the customer? You know, because like you said, it's going to cause some pretty big hassles 3, 4, 5 years down the road for that customer that is going to be pretty flipped on that kind of a car. And I think that's your customer that's going to be, they're going to be out there driving 3 or 4 hours, you know, to find a dealer, you know, the next time they're buying one, maybe that is not going to do that to them this next time. But the reality is that what the average customer buys a car, what, every 3 or 4 or 5 years, 3 to 5 years,
3 to 5 years.
So, I mean, you know, how many, I guess the question becomes, how many evolutions or buying cycles do we have left before the rules kind of catch up with us? I don't think that we have a ton of life cycles of customer or generations of buying process to get this worked out. I mean, the customers that we're seeing today in the dealership today, those customers are the customers that I think are going to make or break you the next time, you know, they're in the market. And if you're doing these things, if you're slamming them with these, you know, $39.95, $49.95 market adjustments and the same thing with your, you know, preferred customer packages with hints and, you know, nitrogen in the tire and maybe wheel locks for $4,000 or $5,000. I don't think they're going to have much loyalty to you. I think they're going to be driving to, you know, get the best deal. If they don't kind of become the customer of the next company that, you know, they want to give a shot, because there's a handful of companies right now that are, I mean, you know, and I presume that there will be an increasing number of companies that step into the marketplace, as there has been. I mean, there's been a ton of companies that have tried to give CarMax and Carvana and Vroom a run for their money, you know, kind of mirroring that Tesla experience or whatnot, or the touchless experience, a transparent experience. But I think that we have a lot of, I think we have some say as to where this goes.
Well, you know, you were talking about the relevancy, you know, and me personally, and this is my opinion, you know, and it's solely my opinion, Vroom and Carvana, the sustainability of that doesn't scare me because of the title issues and everything else that they have and multiple platforms and everything else. Yeah. CarMax is a different animal. It's a proven platform. Their process is a very consumer-friendly process. If you don't like the price, that's okay. We understand. We're going to give you a trade as a separate transaction. But the relevancy of CarMax is very, very important, because if you look at the average transactional price now, you're looking at a car payment between $700 and $1,000. And I just seen CarMax the other day says within the next 6 months to a year, they want to be at 60 or 65% of their inventory, $25,000 or less. So I wonder how many other dealers out there had the foresight to take a look and watch what they're doing. And they're saying, well, they're buying up all these, you know, lower end cars and they're paying a lot for them. But I think what they're watching is, as these transactional prices go up, people are going to need an alternative for transportation. So if I can buy up as many cars in that platform as I can within the next, you know, 60, 90, 120 days, I own that market. Because they're just not out there. So, you know, for anyone in the retail business not to look at CarMax as a competitor, and not so much with the new car, because they've sold, you know, most of their new car franchises, but certainly they are a player to be reckoned with in the used car market, and they do a very good job at branding and driving people to their stores. So, you know, I think those same people that would dismiss them are the same people doing the same types of things that we've been talking about. And they're living in the past that we've always gotten by with it, and we're always going to do it. But I think that's going to catch up to them very soon, and they'll find that it's not sustainable to continue to do things that way, because their customer bases will be depleted. I think with these FTC things, you're certainly, if it goes into place, they're going to make examples out of somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and do you really want to be that guy?
Yeah. There's people that, I mean, there's people that, I guess, you know, obviously we're biased in our own opinions, but there's people, I think, and there's people that are just kind of living in decades past right now. I mean, it's funny in this, it's probably the large, I mean, you know, there's groups on Facebook and there's groups all over the internet, but the largest group that I know of is kind of the subreddit called Ask Car Sales. And it's got hundreds of thousands of people in it. And you know, some of the moderators that run it, I mean, it's a lot of car professionals in it, and they've got usernames, things like, you know, this isn't the real username, but I mean, like very close to this kind of thing. You didn't read your contract. Right. And that's the whole mentality. Like, I really encourage you people that are listening to go check out this group. It's a little scary how cocky we're being right now in an industry that really needs to be focused on longevity, sustainability, you know, earning repeat and referral business. And that's something that, you know, a lot of stores are going to struggle with if they're not really focused. Do you think that there are stores that are in, do you think the stores that are engaging with this risky behavior, the unsustainable business practices, the deceptive business practices, do you think those stores are potentially going to just do an about face? Or do you think that those stores are that are engaging in whatever it is, the 51% or the 50% or the 60, whatever it is, do you think those guys are just going to kind of learn their lesson the hard way? Or do you think some of them are going to wise up and they're going to say, oh, okay, I probably should stop price adjusting. I probably should stop doing these egregious, you know, preferred customer packages for $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. Do you see them just kind of doing what they're going to writing it out or what? What do you see?
Happening? I would like to say, you know, that I'd like to see them and give them the benefit of the doubt that they would change the way that they do things. But 35 years in the business tells me that they're not going to change it. And I'll tell you, I see this and I truly don't understand it, because if you're an owner of the store and you see it on social media, okay, and I'm talking about Twitter, TikTok, sitting in the store talking about that I just made $20,000 on this consumer, okay, you're not even hiding it anymore. You're putting it on, your employees are putting it on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and they're laughing and they're putting it on. How do you, my question is, how do you retain that employee? And it's not only that employee, because that tells me that is the culture of the place that they work. It's not just the employee, but it's the culture in which they've been trained in how to do things.
Yeah. Yeah. You brought up a really interesting point. It's a disturbing trend over the years that's picked up far more than I ever would have hoped, and it's disturbing is just the best word that I can use to explain it. You're talking about, you know, Twitter and TikTok. I don't really do Twitter, but I can tell you that there's been an increasing number of salespeople that I have seen on some of these social media platforms like YouTube and mostly TikTok. TikTok is kind of taken, I mean, obviously TikTok is a big deal right now. There was a time when TikTok came out where I was like, I'll never get on that platform, but I think to have a clue, you have to be on it today. Whether you're creating content or not, I mean, and the I'm from Chicago, and in Chicago there's our public TV station was Channel 11 WTTW, and the call letters stand for Window to the World. And when I watch these TikTok videos, it's like the window to the world for these dealerships. Many of the times that I'm seeing these salespeople that'll, you know, stand in front of their dealership sign, or they'll be wearing their shirt and their name badge, and it's very obvious who they work for. They, you know, may not have branded it into their channel or whatever. Maybe they have, but they're not even hiding who they are. And you have to wonder, like, just exactly what you said, what their culture is like for their dealership to not only kind of, one, be doing these things, but then to not have, I mean, it just blows my mind that they're the level of cockiness out there right now. You've got these young, you know, 20 something year old young men that are getting on a stage with, you know, the background is, or the backdrop is your dealership, bragging about how they've just ripped off a customer for, you know, $10,000 or $12,000. That's not a good look. And that's what consumers are seeing today. And it brings up so many other conversations. One, you shouldn't be doing that. And two, you should have some social media policies in place. But at the same time, when I see videos like that, I am almost glad that they don't, because it's like, good. I hope that, you know, I mean, I can in 2 seconds figure out what dealership this is. And it's really good to know. You know, it's like, I know that's not a store I probably am ever going to be able to help, because they're just too far gone. Not only are they doing this unsustainable stuff, but they don't care that their people are, you know, are getting on a stage and laughing at the customers that are providing for their families.
You know,
it's birthing this whole generation, and I'll let you talk, but I mean, this is a whole nother conversation, but this is really disturbing to me, because I think it's birthing this whole generation of young guys that come into our industry that don't know how to make a living any other way than exploiting people. And it's just, I think it's really dangerous. I think that you can impact somebody's life. And I don't think that I'm being dramatic by saying that, by taking an 18-year-old, you know, putting him in a store that's doing this stuff, teaching him that this is how you provide for your family. And then it's okay to laugh about it, you know? And I see a lot of these young men move on to other deceptive sales gigs, you know, where they're, you know, walking door to door selling solar and ripping old ladies off. And look, I'm not against making money, but yeah, those, I'm sorry, you kind of hit a nerve with me when you talked about those TikTok videos, because I think anybody that really is invested into our industry, they see those videos and they just want to throw up.
I'll say this, Colin, and not a huge fan of reputation management, because, and I've watched it over the years in the car business, when these groups start spending the amount of money that they are for reputation management, it tells me you're doing the wrong thing.
Yep.
You know, so if you're spending thousands, you know, some stores are spending $5,000, $6,000, you know, I get some dealer group things that, you know, I share with people, and I'm like, why would you be spending that much money? If you're doing things the right way, you would not be spending that much money. And when you see these videos and these things, it just tells you, you know what? This is why social media companies and reputation management companies have grown the leaps and bounds that they have. Because if you can't even police your own people in your own store, standing in front of your own building, telling people how I'm ripping people off every time they come in here. One of the worst ones I've seen was a sales manager saying, hey, my F&I guy didn't even show the people the paperwork in the office. They just signed the payment. I'm like, that is something to be really proud of. I mean, you just have just forwardly come out and told everybody you've done everything ethically, morally, and illegally. And you're proud of it. But what is disturbing is that you're still employed there.
You know, that's just it. Is that, I mean, ethics in auto is, by a lot of dealers, that's not looked at as a, I mean, that's looked at as a liability. You know, I mean, there's a lot of dealers that would look at a guy like you or a guy like me and they'd say, no, that guy's not for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I tell people this, you know, and I'm okay with that, because one of first things, if I've ever interviewed with anybody, I ask is, hey, what is your policy if this would happen? And they look at you like, what? I'm like, okay, we don't need to have a discussion any farther, because there would be no way that I would work for you. Because if you're afraid to answer that question, then that tells me that you're already engaging in the process.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a shame, because, you know, there are a lot of good people in the car business. In 35 years, I've met a lot of good people that do the right things. But you know this, Colin, yourself, the people that do the right things don't get recognized. It's always the people that do the wrong things that are celebrated. And then when they get caught in the celebration of what they're doing, just much like the situation in New York, then everybody that helped promote that turns their back on them.
Yep.
You know, and it's sad because, you know, these behaviors like you were talking about are trained into these people, and then they're elevated to this social status of this is who I am, and maybe not really who the person really was, but once they feed into that popularity and everything else, then it becomes a stigma for them and they'll never shake it.
Yeah. One of the things that I've, so many good points that you're making, Richard, but one of the things that I've seen an increasing trend with the videos that people are doing is that the same people that are doing some of those videos, kind of making fun of the customers they just exploited, are offering themselves up on the same platform, on their same channel, to do basically consulting or help customers buy cars, and kind of not fall victim to the very same things that they're doing in their dealership that they're bragging about. It's the most unsustainable time I've ever seen in our industry, where somebody can go brag about the customers they've ripped off, the customers that are providing for themselves and maybe their family, and then try to market themselves as a car buying concierge in a difficult market to help customers navigate through some of these things that they're actually, it's mind boggling right now. It's almost kind of turned into a black, you know, or a Republican versus Democrat thing. I mean, it's like you're either baked into doing this the right way and you know, you're in the long game, or you're just playing your cards on the short game right now. But you made so many good points, man. I'm really glad that we got you on the podcast, Richard. I've really enjoyed, you know, speaking with you. I know that you're as passionate about the industry as I am, and you're one of the good guys out there that are, you know, that are trying to do the right thing. You are doing the right thing. You care about, you know, actually being relevant in the coming days, weeks, months, and years. I think that, you know, it's just been a blast having you on. So I really appreciate your time today, man.
No, man, I really appreciate the opportunity, you know, just to have the time to talk to you. And, you know, I followed you on LinkedIn for quite some time. And I like the fact that you're very vocal about the way that you feel about the business and the way that you want to see things done the right way. And, you know, that's something that's near and dear to my heart. There's a right way to make a profit, and we can make a profit if we do things the right way, treat the customer the right way. So, man, it's been a privilege to be on here with you, Colin. I appreciate the opportunity to have the time with you today.
Awesome, man. You're welcome back anytime. Obviously, we're going to stay in touch, but thanks again, man.
All right, man. You have a great day, man.
All right, you too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.